No.
What's your least favorite scary movie?
Fucking A. Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about our least favorite aspects and most debatable opinions of our most favorite scary movies.
We fight over our favorites.
My name's Jesse.
My name's Travis.
And today we're coming at you with another bonus episode. Live, uncut, undrawn. You're getting the real thing. No edits. So if you hear a bunch of ums, as Talia barking, Zoe meowing, you won't hear Scout, because Scout does do a lot. If you hear a lot of that, that's just part of what it is, because we're recording two episodes back-to-back in the same night.
Yep.
So, here you go. But today, we are talking A Nightmare on... Ooh. See, you're going to hear that. Normally, we would cut that out. Today, we are talking 1988's A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. Which is apparently a thing that they're trying to make us believe has always existed, but I have never heard this particular rhyme before.
What, Dream Master?
Yeah.
It wasn't even a rhyme in the movie.
It was near the end. She was like, now I lay me down to sleep. The Dream Master my soul will keep, or something like that.
Oh, no. That's stupid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have this on DVD, because apparently we have the whole series on DVD, which I am surprised about each time.
Actually, I don't think we have New Nightmare. We have 1 through 5.
That's a shame. I love New Nightmare.
Yeah, well, we didn't get it because it was on Netflix at the time. I don't know where we got 5 from.
We
didn't
get it because we got all of them on a single pack DVD, mm-mm, except for 5.
Yeah.
But that was also there when we were buying the single pack DVD.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I just remember getting the 1 through 4.
So that's what happened with that. This movie was directed by Rennie Harlan, written... Okay, so this is a very confusing written section on IMDb, so I'm going to go through it the best I can. So the story and screenplay are credited to Brian Helgeland. The screenplay is also credited to Jim Wheat and Ken Wheat, who are both listed as Scott Pierce.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. And William... Oh my god, I can't read my handwriting. Kotzwinkle is credited as part of the story writer.
Okay.
Starring Robert Englund as Frederick, Andres Jones as Rick, Tuesday Knight as Alice. Travis could not believe that credit when he saw it.
Yeah, I thought Tuesday Knight was going to be some kind of like musical artist. I don't know if she is or isn't.
She did actually perform the opening song.
Did she?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So...
You're correct. All right. I mean, that's obviously a good... That's somebody who does music's name, for sure.
Brooke Theiss is Debbie, or it might be Brooke Theiss. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing any of these names. Lisa Wilcox is Alice. Jake is Jason. Danny Hassel is Dan. Probably went on to form Imagine Dragons with his other friend Dan and his other friend Dan. And also Ben was there. If you don't know, Imagine Dragons, the group is Dan, and Ben.
Yeah, it's so fucking stupid.
It's a thing. Look it up. I don't know. We've looked this up multiple times because it's come up multiple times and we can never believe that it's true, but it is true.
Yep.
So that's a thing. We also have appearances by Rodney Eastman and Ken Sagos reprising their roles from part 3, very briefly, somewhat disappointingly.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah. So this is actually the highest grossing Nightmare on Elm Street in the entire franchise, if we don't count Freddy vs. Jason.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm. It had a budget of $13 million and got a worldwide gross of $49.3
million. God damn.
Yeah. So that's nothing to sneeze at.
No. That's really shocking, honestly.
Something else shocking. This is actually the first in the franchise that gave Robert Englund first billing.
Really?
Yeah. Which is kind of a shame that it took them 4 movies to realize he's what's making the franchise work.
Well, he's the only consistent person, so why not?
Yeah. So, fun facts. Real quick, what's a dream you've had recently? Or a nightmare?
You go first, because I can't remember. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Okay, so normally we sleep with the bedroom door open. Because we, like, Talia sleeps on the bed with us, and Scout sleeps on the bed with us, and Zoe, like, I don't think Zoe sleeps ever, but when she does spend some time sleeping on the bed with us. And, you know, we like to have that open door policy. We fully believe that our pets are a part of our family and they should deserve to be comfortable, yada, yada, yada. But they do occasionally act super obnoxious. And when they do, we close the bedroom door just because otherwise we would not sleep throughout the night. And we've tried this. We've tried this before. And if we leave it open, they will be obnoxious all night long. So we just do what we have to do for the time being. There's plenty of that. Like, we've got so much soft furniture throughout the house because we are also creatures of comfort. So it's not cruel, I promise. But anyway, it happened a couple nights in a row where both the cats were being obnoxious and we had to close the bedroom door with them outside of the bedroom. And then I swear that I hear things inside the bedroom that would normally be explained away by cats. And I had a dream that was just like little like goblins or whatever under the bed.
Goblins?
Yeah. Like goblins, gremlins, like some type of little evil creature scratching at the bottom of the mattress. So I guess it's more of a nightmare than a dream.
I remember, is that why you woke up that one morning saying, when did you let Scout out? And I said, Scout was never in here.
Yeah, no, I swear to God, I heard something scratching under our mattress. But
maybe you did, but
don't it wasn't say Scout. That. Don't say that.
It wasn't any of the cats.
Don't say that. So. Travis.
It's the Cheddar Goblin.
Travis.
Dude, it's the Cheddar Goblin.
No, because I didn't get any macaroni out of the deal.
Yeah.
It's not okay. Analyze me, bitch.
All right. I think this is going to apply to mine, too, because I have a very similar one.
Okay,
so, So this is how dream analysts interpret it. We all have a shadow self, and he comes into his own in our nightmares. So your shadow self is a goblin, apparently. This is the part of ourselves that we don't like or can't accept. It may be how you behave sometimes or how you feel. Or it may lie in the thoughts you have about other people. Carl Jung. I did that last time, didn't I?
Yeah, dude, it's you very have a bachelor's in psychology.
J-U-N-G is very, like, it's very easily to...
It's not an American name.
No, it's not, but Jung, like...
Jung.
If it were, like, an American and I were trying to pronounce it like that, I would say Jung, not Jung.
Okay.
Yeah, so, anyways, that dude, he believed that... Carl. He believed that it is part of our life's work to face up to our shadow self and overcome it. This doesn't mean you should eliminate your dark side, even if it were possible, but rather that you should acknowledge it. The shadow is put in his rightful place when you accept it, like everyone else in the world that you have. I am so terrible with commas. Like everyone else in the world that you have got, that you have good. God damn it! I'm so sorry, everybody. The shadow is put in his rightful place when you accept it, like everyone else in the world. That you have good and also less good qualities. He brings fear. That's a really weird sentence.
I get it. Yeah.
He brings fear to our nightmares because we don't want to know about the unpleasant parts of ourselves. If you embrace the shadow, you remove his power, and he won't come knocking on your dreams.
Oh my God, that's so perfect for talking about Nightmare on Elm Street.
It kind of is, yeah, because that's how you beat Freddy.
Yeah, I think that actually fits because I've been kind of like, I mean, I've got diagnosed depression. I feel like I've been fairly open about stuff like that on the podcast before, and I just like I had a rough week, so to have had those dreams and this be the analysis of it is kind of. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's fair. I get it. So. It's kind of weird for me, though, because mine was whenever I can't remember any recent dreams that are interesting.
Yeah, that's fine. You can go to an older dream if you need to. So it's one of those things that, you know, you can't always recall a dream. Sometimes you hold on to it for like a minute and then it just...
Happens a lot. My dream I'm going to pull, since I'm allowed to pull from the past... it's the one that sticks out in my mind the most.
How far in the past is it?
I was a child.
Like, what kind of child?
Maybe, like, 5 or 6.
Okay.
So
not toddler, but not, like,
no.
Preteen.
No.
Okay.
So, Do you remember Bozo the Clown?
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't remember, Bozo the Clown was a personality that had his own TV show back a long, long time ago. And I think it was even way before we were born. But they showed reruns whenever we were children. And I remember watching it. And I remember... this is the dream that sticks out in my mind the most. Like, it stuck with me for my whole life. But it was so weird because I remember it was me and Bozo. And mm-hmm. it was on, like, this circle. Like, it's, like, little, like, it was going in, like, it was rotating. So I was on one end and he was on the other.
Okay.
And basically, it was just rotating. And it was super fucking creepy. And, I don't know. I just remember him being kind of menacing.
Okay.
That's kind of it. And then to close it, though, I woke up and I went into the living room to cry to my mom about it. And Bozo was on TV.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So it was probably.
That's also very fitting for talking about Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. It was probably like intrusive. Like something happening in the real world was kind of like having an influence on my dreams. Yeah. So, but yeah.
Okay, I'm actually going to disagree. I don't think that was a shadow presence. I'm going to say it was more trickster because he's a clown, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So the archetype represents the part of every person that is rebellious. It is the side of human nature that doesn't want to change. The trickster will set out to sabotage fruitful endeavors or halt development that may be psychologically painful. He doesn't care how he hurts you, thinks nothing of ridiculing you for your good intentions, and revels in malicious gossip. The jester or joker, who uses humor to make light of bad situations, represents the trickster's positive side. However, in both aspects, the main function of this character is to prevent you from moving forward and becoming a better person. The trickster is the psychic opposite of the part of ourselves that we can trust. It is the side of us that doesn't care about the consequences of what we say or do to other people. This immature character appears in your dreams so that when you're awake, you are better able to resist the temptation to cause mischief. Do you find life a little dull sometimes? Do you like to cause a little chaos?
That's a lot for a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I was going through all that shit whenever I was a kid. I don't know.
Sense though, like you're consistently developing, and I say this a lot about people who are like, oh, they're just a kid. I'm like, they're a small human, you know what I mean? Like, they are tiny humans, they're developing, they've got personalities, they're learning basic morality. I think that makes sense actually to have this like good versus bad like battle inside of yourself, especially the way you're talking about it, where you're on like opposite sides of like a merry-go-round type thing.
Yeah,
that really honestly makes a lot of sense. Especially because that would have been the age that you would have been starting school and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think you're a good boy.
Yeah, it was tough times for young Travis, apparently. Yeah, so that's that.
All right. So, are we ready to rate this movie?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, what did you think of it?
I thought that I was ready for this movie to be bad. And I think you and I, this is our first time actually watching this.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever watched this movie before. So, I mean, you know. But either way, I was really impressed with everything about it. I don't know. I thought that, well, maybe not everything. I was impressed with, I don't know. I think I just came in with like really low expectations. And whenever I saw that it was like a decent movie, I thought, you know, okay, this is better than I expected.
You know, the moment that I knew you were going to like it?
Whenever I saw Screaming Mad George credited? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So we have to have some horror podcast humility here for a moment because we did not look up special effects artist for part 3. Which is...
No, he didn't do special effects for that.
I thought you said he did.
The makeup effects. No, he just did makeup.
Oh, just did makeup. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So we talk about in part 3 how Freddy like opens up his shirt and it looks like the shunting scene from Society. And we have that same effect here in this movie.
Several times.
But it goes like to 11.
Yeah.
They did full Spinal Tap with it. And it makes so much sense. If you are familiar with the work of Screaming Mad George, you watch this movie and you're like, oh shit, this is screaming Matt George.
Yeah.
All over the place.
He's got a very recognizable style to him. Yes. Yeah, you can definitely tell when he's involved.
Yes, and it's fantastic. And I'm going to go ahead and shout out my older sister here for a second because she, if you follow us on social media, which if you don't, you should because we're hilarious and really interesting. But she saw us posting a couple weeks ago about us watching Society just like randomly. And
it was on our Instagram stories.
Yeah, it was on our Instagram stories. And she was like, I never want to watch that movie that you guys are watching.
We had so many people react to that too. They're like, what the fuck is going on right now? And I didn't even really think about it because I'm just so like jaded by this stuff. I'm like, this is normal horror movie shit right here. And then everybody's like, even remotely subscribed to a horror movie podcast. They're like, what the fuck are you guys watching?
That's a deep cut.
Yeah. Watch Society. Yeah. Just watch it. Don't look anything up about it. Don't even look up the shunting. Just watch
if you are, if you're sensitive, if you are a sensitive person, maybe don't eat beforehand.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I'm shouting out to my sister, Morgan. I know you listen to every episode. Love you. But if you want to understand part of the reason we're obsessed with Society, it's partially because of the practical effects that go into it. And if you want to get a taste of that, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is perfect for it.
Yeah, and I think
so. For all of you listeners out there who don't feel brave enough for Society, when we inevitably cover it on the podcast,
yeah,
just just rewatch Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and then listen to us talk about it.
And I think that the special effects is one of the strong parts about this movie because
it's really fantastic.
Yeah, like the kills are done in a very, it's weird to say this, but in a pleasing way to watch. Like, it's just kind of nice to see that attention to detail.
Yeah, it's honestly one of those, like, you don't think of Nightmare on Elm Street as body horror typically, but this movie really could honestly fall under the body horror category.
I'm going to be honest, I don't think Nightmare on Elm Street really knows where it is. Like, it has, like, an identity crisis.
I wouldn't say it's a crisis. I think that it's just flexible. It's fluid.
I guess. I don't know.
That's okay.
Well, I mean, I guess it kind of works out when somebody has the ability to manipulate dreams. Like, you can kind of make it whatever you want.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. I think the first one is definitely more like typical slasher.
Yeah.
But I think the rest kind of play with different types of genres.
I'd say number two was definitely possession.
Yeah.
Three, what would you say three is?
Three, I
think three went back to the slasher three, four formula. Slasher.
This one is definitely body horror, though. Yeah. I would say it's definitely more body horror. There's a whole lot of elements of, like, talking about the soul versus the spirit, which is just, like, a whole weird debate. We're not going to get into philosophy with this. It's a bonus episode. We're going to keep it kind of short. But yeah.
Okay, well.
What's your rating? Yeah.
My rating for this is, like, a 6.
Oh, my God. That's the rating I was going to give it.
Oh, cool.
So, our average is 6. And I was going to give it a 6 because I like that it continues from part 3.
Oh, I didn't expect that either.
I didn't expect it. I don't fully love, like, I feel like they try and wrap it up a little bit too tidy. Like, it's like, Kristen and Kincaid and Joey all get DC'd from the hospital and they're all going to the same school and they're all in the same friend group still. Like, that's just not believable to me. I've been in group therapy and, like, you're friendly with people, some of the people that you see. And even if they're trauma bonded, you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be, like, part of a bigger group like that the way they were.
I think their situation is a little bit deeper than trauma bonding, though.
No, it's definitely trauma bonding.
Trauma bonding is bonding over having similar trauma, which they did initially.
No, it's a shared trauma.
Yeah, they all shared the trauma initially, and they weren't close before, but then after, like, teaming up together, that's when they became friends.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But then, like, the fact that Kincaid and Joey were part of the larger friend group that Kristen was a part of.
I don't think they were, though.
But the way everybody else talked about them and, like, the home videos and stuff, they were kind of, like, part of it. You know what I mean? They were all in the same school. They were all in the same class. It was, like, all too convenient. You know what I mean? It's very convenient.
I know what you mean, but I think you're wrong. Because I don't think that they were that involved in the friend group. The only reason that Kristen was involved is because she was dating Rick.
I think that it would be easier for us to have this discussion if they hadn't killed off both of those characters in the first 10 minutes.
I agree.
But so we're just going to have to leave it unsaid.
We'll talk about it when we get to the very beginning, kind of, because it kind of brushes on that pretty quickly.
Yeah, so with that, and then also I feel like they were trying way, way, way too hard to push Kristen as the new Nancy, and they put way too much effort into that just to also kill Kristen off in the first third of the movie.
Yeah.
And it just, and even if Kristen had survived till the end, I still would have been annoyed at how much they tried to push her as the new Nancy, because of the way she was like, you've just signed my death wish, mother. And her mom was like, I'm just doing what I had to do. Like, it just, it all felt very much like beat for beat for the first movie, whereas I feel like the rest of the movie kind of continues on with the idea of the franchise without necessarily copying it directly. Because this is a movie that it would be very easy to copy the script from one sequel to the next, to the next, to the next.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th. at least the first few. And that's a taste of Talia barking.
Yep.
Anyway, we're going to go ahead and recap the movie real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
So it starts off, we see a teeny tiny little hand brushing away some dirt and then just absolutely annihilating a piece of chalk, which, as a person who loves to draw with chalk and as an aunt who has tried to share this love of drawing with chalk with her young nephews, is 100% accurate to life, because they will just fucking destroy your chalk and don't care how much you paid for it or how important it is to you to have the full spectrum of color. So that's accurate.
Yeah. Are they also drawing people from their nightmares or in a nightmare?
Well, they drew what I would consider nightmare versions of themselves.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah, the older one drew himself peeing down the driveway, and I was like, I don't feel like that's appropriate, and legally I don't think I'm allowed to see this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, they're in front of, like, the house, which we're just, it's the Thompson house, but it's, like, Freddy's house. It's just become, like, an amalgamation of Freddy's evilness, basically.
Yeah, it's something I don't really understand why they tied that to him. Like, the whole thing is, like, the street. Elm Street is his whole domain, not, like, this one house on Elm Street, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it's a way to try and tie it to the first movie in, like, in the barest of ways without making two not canon. Like, they're tying two in the least way they can.
It's weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just not necessary. I don't know. Like, people don't give a shit about the house anymore. It's such a small part about the thing.
Yeah, that's my thing, is I think the boiler room in and of itself is enough that, like, when you have a dream, you're like, oh, boiler room, cool, boom, scary. They turned it into, like, okay, we're in the house. And maybe it's just because they wanted to be able to have more of a set to work with, which I can see.
I don't know. I think that they just wanted to do something creepy. I don't know. They latched onto it. They abandoned all that shit a long time ago. You don't even have to be, like, a kid of, you know, one of Freddy's victims anymore from when he was, like, originally alive. These are all just random people.
Kristen is not one of the random people. All of the people that were in the institution in part three, their parents were part of the Elm Street Brigade.
Well,
they
yeah.
established that. And Kristen's there. She's here in this opening. She asks the little girl if Freddy's here, and the little girl's like, ha, I don't know. So she calls in Kincaid and Joey, and they're both pissed because they're like, why are you doing this to us? It's not fair. And I agree. They didn't consent to just be pulled into this dream where she's obviously, like, it's not even like she was having a nightmare and Freddy attacked her. It's that she is in a dream and she's looking for him because she is paranoid he is still alive. And I feel like that's a conversation you can have when everybody's awake and consenting to it.
First of all, I'm sorry. I just smacked the microphone, so that's going to show up.
I do it a lot.
But, yeah, we can't edit it out this time.
But I don't always edit it out when I edit.
You should.
I don't.
But I also kind of understand where she's coming from, because it's like a traumatic experience, and she thinks that it's happening again, so she's trying to call people back to like put an end to it again. I get it. It's just her own mind playing tricks, because this is not Freddy influenced at all. This is just like her having her own individual nightmares,
yeah,
because she's traumatized by this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And they didn't consent to be pulled in, and they say they didn't consent, but then they also say the famous last words of Freddy's dead. Zed's dead. Zed's dead, baby.
That's it, baby.
They say Frederick's Dedrick, the pipes and the boiler are cold. And then a dog jumps out and bites Kristen.
It's Kincaid's dog.
Yeah, I was very confused by this because it's not very well clarified in this scene. Because she wakes up and she's got, like, a bloody arm. And then we see a dog with a bloody mouth. And I assumed the dog was in her room.
No.
It's clearly Kincaid's dog.
Did you not see beforehand? Like, whenever Kincaid... there's a shot before he gets pulled into the dream of him sleeping in his room at his desk. And the dog senses that he's being pulled into a dream. So it jumps off the bed and goes under the bed. And I assume it goes to sleep itself. And then it gets pulled into the dream also somehow. And then, you know, I think it just wants Kincaid out of the dream. So it bites her.
Okay, that makes sense. And also, like, as we're talking about this, I feel like Rick and Morty was right to make fun of this franchise in tandem with making fun of Inception. Like, as we're talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes
silly.
Sense.
It's a silly franchise. I love this franchise. We all know this, but it deserved a little poke.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah. Kristen picks up her friend Alice and her boyfriend Rick. They're twins.
Is that established?
It was in something I read online. They were intended to be twins. They were saying it's a no-contact day. Rick was saying it's a no-contact day because their dad, in keeping with the grand Nightmare on Elm Street tradition of shitty parents that have not coped with their own trauma and they're therefore forcing it intergenerationally onto their own children. He is an alcoholic, has not coped with his wife's death, has not coped with his part, presumably in Frederick's murder, vigilante justice or not.
We don't know if that's a thing or not, though. That's never established.
You can assume. We'll talk about it later, but it's kind of hinted at.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, he's an alcoholic. He makes... I hate this trope in horror movies. The widowed father with an abuse disorder that, like, makes a slightly... like, that makes it, like, a sexually inappropriate comment to his daughter. I hate it.
What was the sexually inappropriate comment
you
made?
Oh, you're going out dressed like that.
Oh, I missed the thing.
Yeah, and, like, she's fully covered. Like, you can see her face and her hands. Like, that's it. So, it's just gross. Rick jumps out of his bedroom window on the second floor.
Rick is a what? Whenever you first are introduced to him, he seems so much. Like, it doesn't seem like the type of person that would be fun to have around. He seems like he is on coke all the time.
I think that's part of the reason why Kristen was drawn to him, because, like, it helps distract her from, like, all the shit going on in her head. She's like, okay, cool. I'm going to watch Rick do this and that and this
that
and
makes
that.
Sense, really. Yeah. He kind of reminds me of, like, somebody pretending to be Chandler from Friends, but when he's actually coked up.
Mean.
I'm sorry.
Matthew Perry has been through a lot.
Well, he's fine now.
I respect his recovery journey.
Oh yeah, it's whatever. Good job, Matthew Perry. Like,
but they get to school. Rick is holding a book that I'm pretty sure says Soviet psychiatry. I like, we didn't pause and go back and look at it. I was just like, did that say Soviet psychiatry? I don't know 100% if it did. I didn't want to go back and look because in my head I like to imagine that that's just what Rick studies in his
I was
time.
Yeah, I was expecting it to come up again, but it
so
didn't.
It didn't. No. Their friend Deb is there. She needs help with her trig. Their friend Sheila shows up on her, like, busted up little motor scooter. I love Sheila. She's so adorable. I just want to hold her.
It's weird that she's not really involved in this movie, though. She's just kind of there occasionally.
She's, like, part of the friend group, but she's, like...
never really involved with them.
Yeah, I think, like, the core of the friend group is Alice, Rick, and Kristen, because Alice and Kristen are clearly, like, best friends, and then Kristen and Rick are dating, so it makes sense that they're the core trio, but, like, Debbie and Sheila are also friends with them.
Yeah.
Like, I can see, like, that dynamic makes enough sense to me. And Sheila's, like, very focused on her studies and all of that.
Well, like, yeah, one of them is just, I think, involved because it's, you know, Rick's sister.
Yeah, but no, Kristen is friends with Alice, too, though.
Kinda. I thought that the way that I took it was they're only friends because of the relationship.
I mean, even so, like, you can be friends regardless of how it started out. Like,
yeah, that's true. It
doesn't just have to be like, oh, that's my boyfriend's sister. Like, you can just be like, oh, we're really good friends, and yeah. I'm dating her brother.
That's fair.
You know what I mean?
That's fair. I'm just saying.
Relationships can be complex and dynamic.
I guess.
Anyway, she's got asthma. She has to puff on her inhaler, and some douchey jocks are walking by, and they're like, you're sucking on the wrong nozzle, and Debbie stands up for her. So I really love Debbie and Sheila and their dynamic together.
Yeah, it's not really explored a lot, but, you know, whatever it is touched on, it's kind
of
nice.
I would have loved to see more of the two of them together, and I'm sure that fanfic exists of Debbie and Sheila out there, because if...
Not the kind of fanfic you want.
You don't know what kind of fanfic I want, Travis.
Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, I feel like they had a nice little bit of chemistry between the two of them. Rick is karate kidding around in his room. That's how I wrote it.
Yeah, and he's not really doing anything that's actually anything remotely close to karate. He's just punching the air, and then occasionally he punches the sandbag, but
What year did Karate Kid come out?
I don't know. I was definitely thinking that this was Karate Kid influence, because he's got the bandana with, like, the red sun image on it. He's definitely channeling the Karate Kid energy. I'm almost certain that's what they were going for there with the...
What year are you? 1984. Yeah, no, he definitely watched The Karate Kid and was heavily influenced by it, especially after his mom's death, and he, like, threw himself into it. That's how
he's coping with it.
Yes, yes.
He's terrible at it.
Yeah, no, he's not good. His dad is still an asshole. He shows up. He's got, like, the cliche bottle in a brown paper bag.
Yeah, like, why even bother trying to hide it? Because they obviously know
he's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
He yells at Alice for giving him a salad, and I'm like, dude, you're forcing your daughter to serve you dinner, which, one, not appropriate because she's a child and you're a parent. Fix these priorities. Two, it's also fairly sexist, like, that the girl in the house has to give you dinner.
Yeah.
Three, if you don't want to sound like, go to fucking Wendy's on your way home.
Yeah.
I do not have time for you. I wish that he had died in this movie. I was waiting for him to die. But of course, Freddy doesn't always kill the parents. Like, he killed Nancy's dad in part three, but, like, for the most part, he doesn't kill the parents.
You just called him Freddy.
Oh, shit, I did, didn't I?
You did.
Because I was more focused on fucking hating Rick and Alice's dad than I was on annoying you.
Yeah.
That's how much I hate this guy. Yeah. I hate him more than I love annoying you.
It shines through. Yeah, he's a shitty piece of shit.
Yeah. So dog Jason is in Kincaid's room, and I didn't say this when I was reading off my list of actors, but dog Jason is played by dog Jake. His name's Jake.
Dog Jason.
Yeah, I love it. I love, like, and we're fairly certain. So we're back to back. We back to back watched movies, and we're back to back recording movies right now. And we're actually going to be talking about our Friday the 13th movie in our next recording. And the next one was bought out, but is, like, produced and distributed by New Line Cinema, which New Line Cinema is the owner of Nightmare on Elm Street. So it feels intentional.
Yeah, I don't know when did this come out.
I don't know when they got bought out.
When did this come out?
1988.
Yeah, no, this isn't the...
No. Yeah, no. Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, you can have the name Jason as a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the audience, but I just think it's funny that we're, like, doing these back-to-back.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I get it.
But yeah. So Kincaid falls asleep. And then he wakes up in the trunk of a car, and he says, "This is not my dreamland." And so he gets out of the trunk of the car. It feels very much like the beginning of Saw 3, where slow-ass motherfucking Jeff falls out of the crate on the forklift.
Kind
of,
yeah.
That's kind of the imagery I got. Which, yes, I know which one of these came first and which one didn't. I'm just making a connection between the two.
What are you talking about?
I know that Saw 3 came out way, way, way after this one. Yeah.
That's not a dispute.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that this was a reference to that. Oh, or that that was a reference to this. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I'm connecting similar imagery. But he sees his dog, Jason, and Jason barks at him and then looks really ashamed. And I'm going to say ashamed because that's how Talia looks when she barks and she knows she's not supposed to be barking. Like, she'll bark and then she puts her ears back and, like, looks at us like, I know I wasn't meant to do that, but I couldn't help myself.
Yeah.
That was the exact energy he had. And then he pees fire.
Yeah. So, like, in the previous movie, everybody has their own dream power. My assumption is that this dog's dream power is that it can pee fire.
So, the actual legend surrounding this, I think you will appreciate.
Is this an actual thing?
Yeah. So, supposedly, what happened is when... there was some sort of instance where the director, Renny Harlin, ran into James Cameron, heard that he was directing part four.
And James part four of what?
Nightmare on Elm Street. James Cameron heard that Renny Harlin was directing part four of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
And he said, oh, well, how are they going to bring Frederick back to life this time? And he sarcastically was like, oh, a dog's going to pee fire on him.
this is actually what is, like, documented.
Supposedly, that's the supposed lore behind how
this
came about.
This man took a fucking one-off conversation with James Cameron, and he wanted to impress James Cameron.
I don't think he wanted to impress James Cameron. I think he was annoyed by James Cameron.
You think so?
Yes. I respect it.
It's fine, but, I mean, come on, dude. Like, you could do better.
James Cameron is pretentious as
James Cameron was like, I just made that guy, actually. Just by asking that question, he's like, I made Freddy be resurrected by dog pee.
I appreciate it. It worked out well. It got a good laugh out of us.
It did, yeah, but he fucking owned that.
Well, and then Frederick owned Kincaid. Because Kincaid thinks that he's killed him. He drops a car on him. He's like, ha ha, I got you. But he's celebrating too soon. He tries to call to Kristen for help, but he gets stabbed before she
senses it. And thus begins the Freddy revenge tour.
Yep. And then we immediately go to Joey's room because these actors, like, it was like a footnote in their contract, apparently, to appear in part four. And
not
like,
apparently, because the person that played Christy is not in this movie. They recast her.
Yeah, no, and nobody knows for sure why Patricia Arquette didn't come back. There are several rumors, but even in the documentary, Never Sleep Again, nobody is positive why she didn't come back.
I think that she just wasn't interested. I mean, she obviously went on to, like, bigger movies later on down the road. I think that she just felt... This is my opinion. I just feel as if she probably felt she was above it. And whatever, fine. But, you know, come on, man. Horror had a completely different reputation back in the 80s.
Yeah. So Joey is in bed, and he's got his headphones on, and he's looking through a magazine, and the TV's on in the background, and there is no way this is not a callback to the first movie with Johnny Depp in his bed with his headphones on, and, like, he's got the TV on. There's no way.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, he gets pulled through the bed, but in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. And he is still, if you remember, in part three, he had a dream where he was seduced by Frederick as a busty lady. And he's still just as horny, and he feels safe to be horny in his dreams because he thinks that Frederick's dead. So when he sees a naked lady swim up to him through his waterbed, he thinks nothing of it. And then he gets pulled into the waterbed, and that's how his mother finds him the next day. And she's horrified. But I feel like I would have a moment, and I don't have kids, so who knows how I would actually react. But, like, I feel like if I pulled off my child's bed sheets and saw them inside their waterbed, I would have a beat where I'd be like, what? And then I would freak out. You know what I mean? Like, just a beat to process what I'm actually looking at, because how is my child inside of their waterbed and there's still water there? There's not a flood on the ground. You know what I mean?
No.
No?
I would immediately react with emotion. And then after the fact, I'd be like, wait a second. You know, I don't know. Like, I would see, like, a dead, like, my dead child, and then I would be freaking out, and then...
But I feel like my my brain at first would like refuse to believe that he's dead. You know what I mean? Like kind of that shock response.
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's natural.
Yeah, but, I'm just saying, like, I feel like I would immediately go to shock and be like, this isn't real. And then I would be like, but.
But.
Yeah, so they're both dead. Now the only character we have from part 3 is Kristen, who is no longer played by Patricia Arquette. It's Tuesday night.
Yep, and yeah, God, Tuesday night is such a fucking stupid name. She's fine in this, but what the fuck is she thinking? Tuesday night's not even like a remarkable night. It's just Tuesday night, whatever.
That's when they've got like the discounted tickets at Cinemark.
Is it?
Yeah.
Maybe in honor of her her performance in Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or 4.
I don't know. Okay, so Rick is giving Alice a pep talk because she's got confidence issues and she covers her mirror up with pictures of her friends, blah, 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 blah. We're going to have a growth story for Alice. This movie is basically the deal. And he like tries to teach her karate, but because he's not good at karate, he's not teaching her very well. And she kicks her shoe into her fish tank.
No, you know what my issue though with this is like, that he's clearly terrible at karate, but he's later, like, whenever she gets his abilities, he's
we
like,
trained him badly on purpose.
Well, he's supposed to be apparently amazing at karate. It's just, it does not come across on screen.
Yeah, it's just, eh. So, at school, Kristen's like, we've got matching luggage, which is apparently just a shitty way of saying you also have eye bags under your eyes. And I'm just like, dude, first of all, you sound like you're about 45 years old. Second of all, like, be more compassionate. Just be like, hey, you look like you also have not been sleeping well. You know what I mean? Instead of trying to be cutesy about it in a way that, like...
I think that she appreciated it, though, because she reuses it later.
No, it's because she was absorbing her friend's power.
Oh, was that a...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I
yeah.
didn't take that. Yeah, that no, makes
she,
sense.
She also uses Sheila's mind over matter and Kincaid's fucking A.
I just thought that she was just taking all these... this whole time, she's like a sponge. She's like, that was so cool. I gotta use that later.
She's like, I've got no personality. Because they don't give Alice a personality. Alice does not get her own personality besides shy.
Yeah, it's really
throughout
fun.
This whole movie.
This whole time, I thought that she was just like, she's trying to like incorporate it in her life later on because she heard it and it sounded like, how about baggage?
No, that's not what's happening.
Okay.
But yeah, so Alice is like, yeah, I used to really like dreams, but I don't like my nightmares. So we get this whole like, they don't use this enough in the movie to have really incorporated this in the script. I feel like it could have been cut out, but I feel like they were trying to hint at like, you can have positive dreams and negative nightmares, but it doesn't come across well enough in the final product. Like, it could have been cut out.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the thing, basically. The way that I thought that they were setting this up was, I thought that they were going to have her be, like, her own thing. Instead of incorporating, what's her name?
You're going to have to be
the girl from 3.
Kristen.
Instead of, like, taking her powers here in a little bit, I thought that she was, like, the dream master. I thought she was going to be able to... manipulate dreams on her own because she has I thought that she had like some kind of like ability to do like lucid dreaming type thing. Nope. But nope,
she knows some sort of rhyme from when her mother was alive.
Yeah, and I thought that was like a hint that like I've unlocked the power to
no,
do this.
It's just like it's a plot device that they use at the very end of the movie. I feel like it was probably added in near the end of screenwriting. And they're like, yep, that works. We'll throw it in an earlier scene. So that way it doesn't seem like it came from completely out of nowhere. It doesn't work very well for me.
No.
There's a lot about this movie I like, but I feel like some of it was very forced.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
But yeah. Also, because we're not editing this, I'm not going to be able to add in any of my normal fun music cues. So I would like everybody to pause for a second and listen to just Part of Dreams by Japanese Breakfast, because that's what I would normally put in this part.
That's the song Dreams?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, you are. You just don't know it off the top of your head.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll play it after we're done recording. Okay. So Kristen has kind of like a panic moment in class because she notices that Kincaid and Joey are missing, and she's sure that they're definitely dead. And to be fair, she's correct. But she passes out. She wakes up in the nurse's office, and you're like, is that Robert Englund in drag?
She doesn't just pass out, by the way. She runs up to Rick, and Rick like kind of barely puts his hands on her, and she flies back against the wall and gets knocked out. So she gets taken to the nurse's office.
He's so good at karate.
I guess that's probably it, yeah. He's like, shit, I didn't realize I was that strong.
Yeah, no. So she wakes up in the nurse's office. Robert Englund's there in a nurse's uniform. He squirts a syringe of blood at her, and I need to take like half a second to talk about the super, super, super gross guy that was just arrested and sentenced to jail for like 10 years for injecting a woman with his own sperm. Have you seen about that?
I actually just saw like the headline earlier today. I didn't see that it was injected. I thought that he just like got it all over her.
No. He had a syringe, like a needle syringe, not like a turkey baster type situation.
Yeah, not, my mind immediately went to don't breathe here. Yeah. No,
he had like a syringe and his semen was in there. And he, like, stuck her in her butt cheek while she was, like, trying to grab a grocery cart. And he was, like, feels like a bee sting, doesn't it? And, like, it was his semen. Like, it's so fucking gross. It's so fucking gross. And I feel so bad for this woman because that is assaultive and violating in a way that, like, we don't typically conceive of. And that's gross and horrible.
Yeah, that's, like, that's, like, a new way to go about that.
Yeah. Super villain level right there.
Yeah, that's it's insane. Gross. Why would you even think to do something like that?
I don't know, but I just needed to talk about it on a public forum, and him squirting the blood out of the syringe made me think of that. Gross. Because blood typically doesn't belong in a syringe like that either, so. Yeah. Anyway, she wakes up for real and sees the actual nurse, and the nurse is like, she's like, I don't want to deal with you this whole school year. Which is good news for Kristen because she won't, like, the nurse, is good news for the nurse because she won't be dealing with Kristen for most of the school year. So there's a diner and it's called the Crave Inn.
Ha-ha! So good.
Great. Love to see it. Alice apparently works there and Dan comes in. Dan, she's in love with Dan. He is some sort of a sports guy. And to be fair, he is very cute. He's tall and he's got swoopy hair.
Swoopy hair?
Yeah, it like swoops over. I don't like his haircut, but he's got a thick head of hair.
Would have been better if he had a mullet.
No, Travis, stop.
This is the 80s. Stop. Prime mullet time.
Stop. We were at a Kentucky football game last night, and there were so many mullets, and Travis pointed out every single one of them to me.
I'm just saying, I called the mullet comeback years ago, and I'm just reaping every single mullet that I see. I'm just like, yes, thank you for proving me right.
It's like in this movie where Frederick is absorbing all of the souls. You are absorbing all of the mullets.
I am. I really am. They're all like just shooting, like the energy of them are just shooting into my body. And I've got like, I open up my chest and it's just like this like whole screaming Mad George little mural of mullets.
Ew.
That's what's happening, fellas.
Anyway, Deb comes up. She's like, too bad your ship's over. I'm going to take Dan's table because she's joshing her because she's Alice's friend and knows Alice is shy and has a crush on Dan. Me, me, me. That's the way they are. Deb doesn't have time for boyfriends because she likes to work out all the time. That's her singular character trait in this
she's
movie.
No, she's really into Dan. She wants time for a boyfriend. She just...
She admits that he's cute, but she's, like, not actively going out for him because she knows that Alice is interested. And she's got to do her bench presses at night. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have time for a boyfriend. What if she can outlift him? Will a 16-year-old guy handle that well? No, there are plenty of adult men who do not handle stuff like that well.
Let's see. There is a line here. It'll take more than bench presses to beat him, is what they tell her at some point later.
Here's where I got a little bit mad. It was because Sheila comes in and she's talking to all of them. And Alice is talking about how she's just like trying to pick up shifts. Clearly her home life situation is not good. This is a forum for her to escape that situation, right?
Yeah.
Like that's very clearly evident. But Sheila's like,
do you want to be a waitress for the rest of your life? And I'm like, that's like,
she's in high school.
As fuck. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, just like not a.
Yeah. First of all, she is in high school. So like, dude, what you're doing at 16 is not necessarily what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Second of all, even if you do wait tables for the rest of your life, if it pays your fucking bills, that's not the be all end all of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
It's like, that's such a shitty mentality.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And like, I get that Sheila's just trying to like, she's like, you're a smart person, Alice, you can do more than that. Like, and that's fine or whatever. But like, it's also like the way she's going about it is like classist and shitty.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Let's see. Kristen is blaming herself for these deaths because Kristen and Rick have walked in. So Alice, Kristen, Rick, and Dan.
For whatever reason. He just walks out the door with him. There's no like indication like, oh yeah, we're bringing Dan because he's some kind of dream expert. He's just like, hey, I'm Dan and I'm coming along.
Yeah. I mean, they have to get him into the script somehow. And obviously, Alice's sole characteristic is that she's shy, so she's not going to go talk to him. So.
Well, Rick was called over by him at that point, but he tells him, he's like, hey, I got to go. And then Dan's like, hey, I'm following.
It's implied that they know each other. And it feels like they try to make it seem like they're on the same like high school sports team, but we know that Rick is only interested in bad karate, and I don't feel like the high school has a bad karate team. You know what I mean?
I think Rick was walking up to Dan one day, he's like, hey man, if you want to know karate, I'm a karate master. And he like saw the Karate Kid headband that he had on him. He's like, shit, that dude knows his stuff.
Yeah, that's what he was doing. He was like trying to set up private karate lessons with Rick. That's why he's looking for him.
And Rick's like, I gotta go. I gotta take some karate. This is definitely a test.
So Kristen's mom sees them all at the house. Why Kristen's mom is cruising for her, I don't know. I remember Kristen's mom being fairly absent in the last movie.
Maybe she's more involved after the whole institutionalization.
Maybe. We're going to talk about that in a second, though.
Yeah.
They see the chalk drawing from her dream at the beginning of the movie is still on the ground.
But then it's not because it disappears.
Yep. So Kristen's mom is very shitty about Kristen not wanting to eat. And she's like, I don't know, mother. Two of my friends just died. And that's where like this whole scene feels very much ripped off from the first Nightmare on Elm Street, where she's like, you know, just talking to a parent that acts like they're being blasé about friends' deaths or whatever.
Yeah.
And then her mom drugged her drink. Her mom roofied her child.
Yep.
It's shitty as fuck, and I hate it. And also, it's confusing because her mom doesn't even wait for her to finish her lemonade before indicating that it's drugged. So if you're going to roofie somebody, that was a bad move. And I'm not telling people how to more efficiently roofie somebody, but
I'm just like imagining it like she like takes a sip. She's like, gotcha.
It's kind of like when we were at BJ's a few weeks ago and you didn't get a straw, but you were convinced I'd hidden one and I really hadn't. But then when you went to the bathroom, I told her, server, I was like, he thinks I hid his straw. Please give me one.
Did you actually tell them that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you just asked for a straw.
No, she thought it was hilarious. So she gave me a straw to play along. But I cannot keep a cool face for shit. So as soon as you came back, I was cracking up.
Did she also think it was hilarious that she didn't give me a straw in the first place?
I don't think she noticed.
Yeah, she didn't.
So.
Fucking piece it.
She was like one of two servers on that night, and it was a Saturday night. Give her a break. It was a rough time.
Yeah, it was a rough time. Yeah. Not having a straw.
Oh my God, get over yourself. You were eating from like a reused fork. You can drink from a reused cup.
I did. I had to.
Exactly. It's fine.
I overcame.
One less straw contributing to environmental pollution. You're welcome.
Yeah. I overcame my difficulties.
Anyway, her mom drugged her drink. She yells at her mom. She like sees that there are all these pills. I want to know how many sleeping pills she put in. I have so many questions about this.
There's a lot.
Because first of all, they were time release capsules, which you're meant to take and like they slowly release in your system so that way they continuously work. You can have like a gel capsule is like an instant release, you know? Mm. And I've got a sleeping pill prescription,
And that's an instant release because that's, you know, that's what makes sense if you need sleeping pills, right? So I'm confused, first of all, that it's a time release issue. And then she goes up to her room and she's stumbling around. And that's not how I've... And it's likely a different prescription. And I'm not going to say every prescription is the same. But the way she's, like, stumbling around is not any experience I've ever experienced or witnessed with sleeping pills.
Yeah, I don't think it's accurate. If you want my honest opinion, I think it's like a placebo thing. She's like, I've been drugged, so I'm gonna stumble around everywhere. And she goes up and she's so fucking dramatic in her bedroom. She's like swinging things off of every single drawer in there. She's like, I've seen this on TV. This is what happens whenever you're drugged. So it's, she's like, just like,
psh. It's like bad drunk acting.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was terrible. It was not good.
Like, whenever I have to take my sleeping pills, I'm basically catatonic. Like, I can move around and stuff. I just move slow. It's like I'm like a zombie or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like this. Even when, it's just, she looked like the guy that we saw as we were leaving the game last night that, like, fell off the sidewalk and his friends were, like, propping him up between him. And we're like, oh, you've been tailgating since 10 a.m. You know what I mean? Like, that's what she was acting like.
Yeah, except
that, worse.
That shit was real.
Except
this shit right here is
except fake. She hadn't been sobering up during a 3.5-hour football game.
I don't think he was sobering up. He probably snuck shit in.
That's also probably accurate. They did not, if you went through the express lane, they did not check pockets for shit. Anyway.
So they're in the dream now.
Yeah, they're in the dream. She's
imagining, whenever she's falling asleep, she's remembering what
Alice
was
saying about the Dream Master. So she accidentally pulls Alice in.
Well, yeah, as a kid, she imagines herself on a beach. And then there's like a child and she asks the name. And it's Alice as a kid.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so I thought that was going to be important later, but it's not. And then we see Freddy in the distance in the water come up.
I loved this.
Yeah, I did too. It was kind of cool.
Like, it's like a shark fin, but it's his knife claw.
Yeah, it's his claws. Yeah.
It's great. It's a great little gag. He shows up, creates like a quicksand pit.
You know what my mind went to immediately?
That night that we were at...
quicksand porn.
Yeah.
We've talked about this in previous episodes.
Yeah, we have. What is the name of that bar? Like the hipster Ona. Bar? Ona. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just like, back before it was like a college hangout spot, it was just like a weird place and they had quicksand porn on the screen, and I did not know that was a thing, and my world has never been the same ever since I learned about that. So.
To be fair, I don't think they were actually showing porn.
It was like a fetish video. Like, it's not immediately like porn. Like, you're not seeing like
it was YouTube.
Nipples or anything. Yeah. But it's like women getting sucked into porn. It's clearly fetish shit. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she transfers her powers to Alice, so that way Alice can pull people into dreams.
Yeah, this time, I think that she actually pulls, like, present-day Alice into her dream. I think the earlier bit was her, like, imagining Alice. And then here she actually pulls her into her dream. Yeah. And Alice is confused. And then, she gets killed by Freddy and then transfers all of her powers over to Alice. And she gets thrown into the furnace, and this is where I thought that Alice is going to be like, nope. That's not going to be on fire anymore. Like, everything is cool. Like, I've got this shit under control. But no, it's just like, no, you have my powers now. So this is what we're doing with your character in this movie.
Yep. And Alice is shunted into Freddy's society chest. Yep. So the next day or whatever ambiguous amount of time later, Alice is watching videos of her friends interacting. Alice is not in any of these videos because, remember, she's shy. Rick comes down. He's upset because he's grieving, and he grieves like his father through anger. And he's like yelling about how Kristen was always talking about Frederick, and now Alice is talking about Frederick, and he just doesn't want any part of it.
Which is weird, because you would think after so many people talking about this, you would start to think like maybe there's something to it.
Yeah, like I know that. Like, a minor character point about Kristen is that she smoked, and, like, you could say that she fell asleep smoking in bed, which I'm sure is what the official line was
for her. Oh, yeah, her entire room was on fire, by the way. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's three suspicious deaths back to back to back. So, maybe some skepticism is called for. But apparently not yet. Apparently not ever for Rick. Spoiler. Alice at school the next day sees Sheila. They're in the girls' bathroom because it's not a high school movie if you don't have a girls' bathroom combo sesh. She uses Kristen's line about the matching luggage.
Yeah.
And Sheila's like, no, I was having nightmares. I was up studying for this physics test. Like, oh, damn. Sorry, Sheila.
Fucking loser.
Like, both can be true.
So, by the way, I made this anti-bug contraption. Give it to what's-her-face. She hates bugs.
Yeah, it's, yeah, for Deb. Deb hates bugs, and when she squishes them, an inordinate amount of bug juice comes out.
Yeah, we'll to the point where people are like, dude, chill out. Like, the bug is
dead. They feel bad for the bug after she squishes it. And so during the test, Sheila is, you know, she's doing these complex equations, and then all of a sudden, she's smearing blood across the paper, and her hand's going in the desk, and the only one who notices is Alice, and she's screaming, she's like, Sheila, wake up, and then Frederick comes up from behind the teacher's desk, and then he plants one on Sheila, which is an inappropriate teacher-student relationship, first of all, and then he, like, just sucks the life out of Sheila, but in real life, she's having an asthma attack, and they're like, give her the thing, and I'm like, first of all, if she's your friend, you should know it's called an inhaler. Second of all, inhaler is not that complex a word.
So this is something that is also kind of inconsistent with some of the previous movies. The things that are happening in the dreams are not being reflected in real life.
I personally really like that they're giving them like a real life spin to make it more plausible that these kids just like,
that's fine, and yeah, that makes it more realistic and, you know, kind of scary to think about, but like
it
previously
is inconsistent. Yeah,
yeah. And because I remember whenever Kincaid got killed originally, I remember whenever he got like straight up stabbed in the stomach, and then we see the shot of him like in the real world when he's dreaming, and you know, there's like nothing on him. Like, I was kind of like hoping that in the middle of this classroom, this person just suddenly deflates.
Mummified.
Yeah, I mean, she just like deflates. He like sucks all of the air out of her.
That would be more true to the established canon.
Yeah.
Of the series, but I also really like this twist of like,
yeah,
how
it's
was it
fine.
Getting interpreted.
I would have been totally cool with that if that's how they originally wanted to do it. It's just I kind of a little bit disappointed.
Alice has resorted to working doubles at the diner to avoid sleeping. Dan asks why, if it is real, why Frederick would be after her. And then Dan is also defending this guy that's like shit-talking Rick. He's like, I feel bad for him. He's got a dead girlfriend and a basket case sister, which is a shitty thing to say. And I feel like he was not just defending Rick. I feel like he was also defending Alice and Kristen.
Yeah.
So good guy, Dan. Dan is the, like, he's the Labrador of this movie. You know what I mean? Like, if he was a dog, he'd be, like, a golden retriever.
Yeah, that's pretty much how he's written. Yeah. He has no personality other than, like, good boy.
He's Mr. Peanut Butter.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So there's, like, a lecture happening that's, like, about dreams is the positive and negative gates. And I read on the trivia, and I don't remember 100% because I didn't write it down, but it was either, like, a producer for this movie or an executive for New Line Cinema, like somebody higher up, like cameoed as the lecturer here. But Alice is in this lecture. She's falling asleep. Do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, this is my favorite part of the whole movie.
Yes.
So this is when Rick is going to this is when he falls asleep and enters into dreamland. I'm going to post about this. So just, yeah, be on the lookout for the scene. But so basically, he's in the bathroom and he's taking a shit, and he falls asleep as he's. I died laughing there. He falls asleep on the toilet, and then as soon as he falls asleep, he starts to see that the door, like the stall door, is like getting unlatched, and all of a sudden it bursts open, and then there's so many cheerleaders just like pour into the stall, and they they swarm him, and he does the whole thing like he has to pull up his pants because he's pooping, and you know, there's all these cheerleaders there, and he doesn't want them to see that he's pooping. Not only that though, his sister is there too, and Yeah. I don't know. That was just such a funny scene to me. And then all of a sudden the stall turns into an elevator. And then it becomes less funny to me because he gets taken down into some kind of little dojo where he has a karate fight with an invisible Freddy. And pretty much gets killed because he fights Freddy when he's invisible and knocks off his glove, but the glove kind of comes back to life and then just shoots right through him. And then, out of nowhere, his sister wakes up Alice in the middle of the classroom, and there's a giant explosion outside or something, and all of the glass in the classroom just bursts, and everybody panics, and then it cuts to black, or fades to black, and then we're now into Rick's funeral, and none of that is ever brought up again. And I don't understand what the intention with that was. Did you understand that? Is there any information about that you found?
About which part?
The part where there's like a random explosion?
No. No, it's never like fully explained. I think it's just, like you said earlier, it's just kind of an inconsistency in the screenwriting.
Okay.
But yeah. So this is where I think we have another hint of like daydreams versus nightmares that they were trying to gently hint about earlier, because Alice sees Rick pop up out of his casket and he talks to her briefly and he's like, nope, it's just a prank on Freddy, so he thinks I'm dead. That's all it is. She has also got Rick's sunglasses and his little headband thing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Deb, Dan, and Alice agree that they're going to make a plan later because they're determined that they're going to help Alice. Like, they're like, we're part of this too. She's trying to do the whole, like, I'm going to be a solo warrior type thing. And they're like, no. Alice says something about, like, oh, it's like I always say, mind over matter, which was Sheila's thing.
Yeah.
And Deb's like, I thought that was Sheila's thing. And Dan's like, she's been absorbing things after the deaths. Ooh.
No, it's like, she's like a completely different person every single day. And he's like, no, after every single death.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. So Alice has like this shrine to all of her dead friends and relatives on her mirror. It's a little bit alarming. She's also got the like little bug defense alarm thing that Sheila made for Deb, and I'm like, give it to Deb. It was for Deb, and I know you need the comfort of something that reminds you of Sheila, but like that was literally meant for Debbie.
Yeah.
It
comes into play later.
It does come into play later, but like I just it's selfish.
Yeah.
And then she plays with nunchucks. Which I feel like if I played with nunchucks for the first time, I would for sure hit myself.
Yeah, but this is her channeling Rick's powers, where he was so fucking good at karate. You know, obviously, yeah, I didn't agree with that.
Yep. So she tries to leave because Dan had said he would pick her up at the diner at 8, and her dad's like, you can't leave. I didn't pay enough attention to your brother. Now he's gone, and we're all we have left. And then he's like, I'm going to go drink alone in the living room. You go upstairs to your room alone, because apparently he's got the most superficial idea of togetherness, which mm-hmm. is just being under the same roof.
Yep.
Not true connection.
Nope.
So I like immediately I was like, well, she's going to do the thing Rick did at the beginning of the movie, which is jump out of the window, which she does. She doesn't see Dan at the diner and she ends up going to the theater. All of her dead friends are in the audience and she sits down, watches the movie as you do when you're in a dream, but don't realize you're in a dream. She gets pulled into the screen and when she sees her old, like an older version of herself at the diner, trying to serve her, and she's horrified that she's I feel like it's meant to be that she's horrified that she's still working there this many years later. Yeah. But I like whatever. So Frederick pops up and they share a pizza and a nice heartwarming moment.
Screaming Mad George, yes, pizza.
This is for sure. If you need to know Screaming Mad George's aesthetic, all you need to do is look at the Pizza of Souls,
because mm-hmm, it's just a bunch of people's faces as yeah. meatballs.
Yeah.
That's so weird to say.
It's a pepperoni pizza.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful visual, and it's very gross, and Frederick, like, dips one of his little razor claws in a meatball and eats the meatball man.
Yeah.
Alice wakes up.
She's still in her bed. Dun, dun, dun. Alice and Dan decide that they're going to go to Debbie, because this time Alice really does actually leave her house. She runs up to the truck. She's like, no time to explain. I'm going to drive. You know, typical movie cliche. Meanwhile, we see Debbie. She's bench pressing in her garage, as you do. I couldn't help but think of Troll 2, where the girl, the sister that's just like,
yeah, bench pressing in her bedroom. I see you.
So Alice and Dan are back in front of the diner, and Alice is like, we need to get to Debbie's. No time to explain. I'm going to drive. And Travis is like, what the fuck is happening? And then Frederick is there, and he's spotting Debbie, except he's a bad spotter. And instead of helping her, he pushes the weight down, breaks her elbows. Ew, it's gross. You hate to see it. And what
I
you
love
hate,
to see it.
What you hate even more is that when her arms break, we get little bug arms coming out, which is clearly Debbie's worst nightmare. And I think this is so much more effective because at the beginning of the movie, when she kills that cockroach, you're like, okay, well, she's definitely going to die, like, via bugs. And I feel like this is a much more creative and effective way to kill her with her own fear than just, like, bugs devouring her, like, her becoming a bug.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's psychological on, like, a fucked up level that I wouldn't have considered.
Yeah, it definitely is, yeah.
Yeah. And then we see Alice and Dan in front of the diner. Alice runs up and she says, no time to explain. I'm going to drive. And Dan's like, this seems familiar. And she's like, shut the fuck up. There's no time to explain. And then we go back to Debbie and she's in a glue trap inside of a roach motel. And her face is ripping off and becoming a roach. And it's all really, really gross. But also, like, probably the most effective visual effects scene of the entire movie. And it's gross. And I hate everything about it. And I love it.
It's amazing. Yeah, they did an amazing job with that part.
Yeah. And then Alice is running out from the diner to meet Dan, and she says, no time to explain. And then he starts repeating the lines with her, and she goes, fuck, we're asleep. So she crashes the car, so that way they have to wake up. But it backfires because the ambulance picks them up, and the paramedic's trying to put Dan to sleep. And she says, no, and punches the paramedic. And he's like, what the fuck? You should have just said something. And she's like, well, I tried to, and you didn't listen to me.
No, she tells him that he's allergic.
Oh, okay. I missed that then.
Yeah, and also, okay, she doesn't wreck the car on purpose. She's trying to run over Freddy, and it kind of, like, does the thing. Yeah, he's standing in the middle of the road.
I've just been, like, writing notes furiously.
I think you were, yeah, because I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, no, she's trying to run him over, and it does the thing, like, where, you know, obviously, he's, like, an immovable object, so it just kind of...
Okay, gotcha. Meanwhile, we see Debbie in the Roach Motel. She gets squished, and she has an inordinate amount of bug juice as well.
Yep.
It's gross.
Yes.
So at the ER, Alice's dad is there for whatever reason. I was sure this was still a dream.
That makes sense to me because I'm sure they were told, your daughter was in a wreck. We're taking her to the hospital. And he shows up.
He just does not seem like an attentive enough parent to have shown up that quickly.
He's a shitty dad, but he's clearly trying to be closer to an extent. I'm not saying he's doing a good job, but, you know, he's like, I gotta be there, you know?
Well, Dan has surgery in 15 minutes. They whirl him back. They're going to put the laughing gas on him. He's trying to fight it. Alice steals her dad's keys, drives home really fast, overdoses on sleeping meds, and jumps into her mirror after putting on all of her dead friend's clothing.
Not just jumping into her mirror. Jumping into her mirror. Shimaru 64s it. This is kind of exactly what I thought of. Yeah, just jumps right into it. Goes into a whole new world.
That's basically what happens. So Alice jumps to the operating room where Frederick is the doctor. She frees Dan. Then Frederick and Alice are like in this abandoned church. Dan has been stabbed. He's bleeding. Then we cut to the OR in real life and they're saying he's hemorrhaging out. But then it's okay. He comes to. The doctor's like, you almost didn't make it, but we were able to save you. And he's like, no, put me back under. And they're like, what the fuck? No. And this is also very inaccurate to how surgery works because you, like, have a recovery room, which is where you come out from under anesthesia. I would know. I've been through it several times.
They brought him out as an emergency because he was hemorrhaging. That's what they said. They're like, he's hemorrhaging. We need to bring him out.
Oh, I didn't hear we need to bring him out. I don't see how that makes sense with the anesthesia.
Well, I think
that's just bad science.
I think they were just focusing on writing a script. Like, we got to get him out of a dream.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alice and Frederick
are fighting. She hits him with the bug sonar, and he's got this terrible effect on his chest.
Awful, man. Yeah, with a movie full of so many good special effects, it's just terrible.
It stands out with how bad it is, yeah. Then she remembers the rest of the rhyme from before, because this does not kill Frederick. A terrible visual effect is not going to kill him. She remembers the rest of her rhyme, and it's something about when evil sees itself, it will die. So she holds up a reflective mirror, and she's like, let my friend's souls free. And like this, again, if you need to know the visual aesthetic of Screaming Mad George, all of these little arms coming out of Freddy and punching him.
I wrote
and
it like, as baby arms.
Yeah. This is, okay, so there are like four people in the entire world who would get this, but Travis has this thing where he likes to get drunk and talk about baby math. Such as how many babies would it take to beat up Professor X?
That's a thing from the past. I used to do it with like random people at bars.
Yeah, but I mean, we talked about baby math like literally on Friday night, I think.
Yeah. Oh.
It's not so far from the past.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So how many babies does it take to beat up Frederick Krueger?
Like six.
We get a nice cameo from Linnea Quigley.
Yeah, he's like doing this whole thing where he like all the souls that he's absorbed, because he's been absorbing these souls since part three, apparently. They start to like, you can see them through him. So this is a definite like Screaming Mad George effect going on here, because it's like a suit, like you got Robert Englund and his head is like up above all this. I'm just imagining what's going on behind the scenes here, and then you have like this whole like see-through suit. Yeah. And then, yeah, Linnea Quigley obviously is the one where you see, like, the boobs through his stomach, because it felt like a really out of place shot, but now, like, when we were watching the credits scene,
Linnea Quigley!
Yeah.
As Soul Inside Freddy, and you were like, oh, she was the boobs!
Yep, gotta be the boobs. But his scene, his death scene is, like, really amazing, because it kind of, it reminds me of the Hatchet Kill, where they, like, take, when he takes the old woman's like upper part of her face and just like rips her face in half.
Yeah,
kind of does a similar thing there with him.
Yeah. So then we go to Dan and Alice walking around a fountain talking to each other. Alice is in all white. There's a mystical mist around. Dan's like, let's flip a coin. They see the reflection of Frederick, which is broken up
only
by the
she
coin
does
hitting the wire. Yeah. And that's it. They just walk away.
Yeah.
We don't have a surprise jump scare. I feel like it's meant to be ambiguous whether or not they're in the dream, though, because that's, like, that's how every other Friday movie has ended, is with, like, this, like, soft dream-like thing, and you're fairly certain it's a dream, and then there's a boom!
Did part three end like that?
I don't remember how part three ended, actually.
I don't either.
It actually ended with Nancy's funeral.
Did it?
Yeah, but then the doctor guy, the psychiatrist, found out that the nun was his mom.
Oh, okay, yeah. Whatever.
Anyway, we don't have any like surprise endings. That's just how it ends.
That's it.
What is your post rating, Travis?
Knock it down to a 5.
I'm gonna knock mine down to a 5.5. I still like a lot about this movie, but there is definitely some like questionable script writing.
That's what knocks it down for me.
The effects are fantastic, but like actually sitting here trying to talk about it and make it make sense, it makes less sense when you talk about it than when you just watch it at face value.
Yeah, there's so many random bits.
Yeah, this is not a movie that works well for an analysis podcast.
No.
I'm gonna say that Talia, however, really enjoyed it. Because she started off sleeping, and then she hits the button to go outside at about 36 minutes and 55 seconds. She comes back to sleep. She goes to sleep in the bedroom alone by herself. I feel like she was really immersing herself.
I felt that too. Yeah.
In the context of the movie. She was a very brave girl. She did hit the button again near the end, so I think it got a little bit too intense to her. But that just speaks to the power of the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Talia probably gives it a 7.
Okay.
Ty is a fan of this movie. It works well for her.
Works for
me.
She
is a dream master herself.
She is. Did you pull a review for this?
I did.
Okay, cool.
Let me grab my phone. I found one, and I hope, like, I got a good one because I knew you kind of liked some of the effects and stuff on this. Okay. It's from IMDb. It's entitled Just a Nightmare. And remember, we are only criticizing the review, not the reviewer. So.
Yes.
If Nightmare on Elm Street 2 left me cold, this Nightmare on Elm Street 4 really bored me. It was so dull and repetitive that I fall asleep a few minutes without attacks from Freddy, smiley face. I can't understand why it's the more popular, colon. Here there is no effort to do a believable and decent story, colon. Freddy comes back with the dog, liquid, in quotations, and dies because of lost souls, 3 exclamation points. The whole movie is just funny and sadistic ways to kill teens with a punchline from Freddy, exclamation point. The cast is definitely not as good as the previous ones, and even the town, comma, places and people seem to go downwards, colon. There is no more neat families, high schools, everything is tidy, broken, a mess. Even the soundtrack is bad as it's just loud rock songs, 2 exclamation points. The only good thing was the tiny, nerdy girl, Sheila, but she was the first to die, and I didn't find interest after. Sure, Harlan knows how to move a camera and give rhythm, but there's no more frightening scenes and no story to capture, exclamation point. I hope that 5 and 6 are much better, thus this run won't end in a sour note, 2 exclamation points.
What?
0 out of 3 found this review helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, well, you have to defend it, so.
Well, so I definitely agree that, like, if this is the most popular out of all of them that are out there, which I don't think is the case, but I'm going to, for the sake of the argument,
it's
this one.
It's the most profitable.
It is. I think that they were duped from the 3 being so good, but with this being the most profitable, I agree that this is not the one to be the most profitable. It's a fine entry, but no. So many better ones here. I also agree that the cast was not as good in this one as it was in the previous one, because I don't know, I feel like you set up the kids from part 3 and then you kill them off like 20 minutes in, and then we get this other cast of people that are really not as good.
Also, if you can't get back a character, recasting is a tricky move, especially if you're gonna kill off that same character halfway through.
Kill her off in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's a weird move.
Like, yeah, let Kincaid and Joey last a little bit longer. Like, kill Kristinoff, whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought, yeah. I can't. All right, I guess I gotta try to. Yeah, the families were so fucking wholesome in this movie.
No. What they're saying in this movie is that the families are not wholesome.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the families.
And they're saying that the families in the previous ones were.
That's right. The families in the previous movies were so fucking good. And we get this piece of shit dad here in this movie. And we get the mom. She was so good in part 3. Like, she obviously was, you know, looking out for her daughter, you know, wanting to fuck some guy, putting her in the institution.
I'm cutting this off because this is a bonus episode anyway, and you're just going on a sarcastic rambling session.
No.
You can't defend this review.
I defend certain points of it.
Okay.
So,
just like, defend the points you defend and stop being a sarcastic asshole.
Fine. Okay. I think that the parts that they're talking about with this one being the most profitable is stupid. I think that's dumb. I think the cast is dumb. Like I said, the cast is fine, but, like, you know, the characters, like,
it could have been better.
Yeah, I don't want the people that I don't care about. You already put the people I did like from the previous movie, so let's stick with them. And I don't know, the effects were fine. I like the effects. But this is not the one. This is not the most successful one.
I think that they largely just kept Kincaid and Joey in as a draw from the previous one, because the previous one was such a hit. And I think that's what drew in more audiences, was they were like, it's a continuation of part 3. But for the rest of this, like, it's just, the families were not neat and wholesome in the previous movies. And I've talked about this. My whole thesis is the Nightmare on Elm Street. The families, like the parents that are responsible for Frederick's death, like, they are dealing with their own, like,
post-traumatic shit in a terrible way.
By the way, you never established why you think that this guy, like their dad, was part of that before. You said that you...
Oh, yeah. So when she was trying to get out of the house, and it's not just that he was saying like, well, your brother's dead, your mother's dead, and I need you to be safe. Like, she was like, you wouldn't believe me. And he's like, no, honey, no, I would. I would.
Oh, okay. Is that your interpretation, or is that something that
you saw? That's my interpretation of it. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, like, it continues the whole situation of, like, parents just being generally disengaged from their kids or overbearing. Like, the parents in this franchise are not good, and they're not meant to be, because they are a part of the problem in multiple ways. So, I, like, that part of the review is wrong. Sheila is not the first to die. First of all, because I loved Sheila, but also I loved Kincaid. Kincaid was the first to die.
I liked both of those characters. Yes. And I wish Kincaid made it further, but I also wish that Sheila would have been more of a character in this
movie.
I wanted
her to be more of a part of it. She was great. Anyway, we don't do One Change or Dream Sequel because it's part of a franchise series, but who did you relate to?
I hate to say it, but Rick, because I also did back karate as a kid. I had a green belt, though.
Obviously, I relate to Sheila. I was the nerd, and I have asthma that could potentially kill me, especially in the Panini times that we're in.
That's true. So. Yeah.
All right. That's it for this movie. Follow us on our social media. All that shit's going to be in the show notes. We got another recording to do, so I'm not going to go through it.
Lazy.
It's in the show notes. It's there. It's fine. If people are listening to the bonus episode, they probably already follow us on social media. It's cool. Tell your friends.
Or they're looking up for the first time.
Also true. Just look in our show notes then. We have got a lot of social media, and it's all under different names because there are different character limits, and we have a long-ass show name.
Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast. Least Fave Pod for Twitter. And What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie Facebook. Boom.
What's your least favorite scary movie at gmail.com?
That's our email. And that's not social media. What's your
least favorite scary movie.com is our website.
Mm-hmm. And just rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever app that you have that allows ratings and reviewings, because that helps us
go up in the charts. Other people can see us. Other people can listen. We can interact more. We really have like a lot of things that we want to do once we're able to do more stuff. And it's just one of those things that you have to have a bigger audience to make stuff like that happen. Mm-hmm. It's a whole vicious cycle, and it's a snake eating its tail.
Obviously, we're going to be covering part 5 here soon, so if you have any opinions on that, just let us know. We'll talk about them.
If you send us an email or a DM or anything like that, we will read it on air. We've done it. We will do it again.
Yep.
So, all right. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.